Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Soapbox, back for a new season, new series of the Commentary Box. The Commentary Box comes tomorrow evening, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. But before you do that, listen right now to the Soapbox. As usual, the hot topics of the day today, of the politics and the current affairs, joined by a crack panel of, one of them's wearing his Fresh Air t-shirt, which is good to see. like that. But rejoining us from the last show of last season, we have from the... It feels a bit like Crossfire. Anyone ever see that old American show where you've got someone from the right and someone from the left, except it's America, so it just sort of be right and righter. But this is genuinely right and left. So from the right, we have Tory pundit Ian McGill.
How are you doing? Thanks for having me back in the show.
That's all right. You should take it as a compliment. We had you back.
Yeah, I do. Scraping the barrel.
It was touch and go. And from the left, former presidential candidate, Green Party member, and all-round lovely person, James McCash.
Hello there. Thank you for such a lovely introduction.
That's quite all right. You notice Ian doesn't get nearly as nice introduction as you. That's because he's been on the show before.
Because he's a Tory.
You can see how this show's going to go. Right. What was I going to say? Yeah, well, we were talking before we came on air about the topics. We're going to start with the EU referendum, because I know... Ian, in fact, to be honest, this was the entire reason I asked Ian to be on, because I knew you had some very strong opinions on the topic. Ian, do you want to tell us a little bit about the EU referendum? Cameron suffered a massive rebellion, 81 MPs voting for an EU referendum, but he managed to hold on to his majority and snub it out. But what were your thoughts on the EU referendum vote?
My thoughts on the EU referendum vote, it did it. Raise my hackles a little bit. If I had been, if the good people in Edinburgh North and Leith had returned me as their MP in 2010, as I feel they should have, it would have been 82 rebels. I would have happily marched through and voted against my government. I think David Cameron played quite a bad hand there. I think he should have allowed a free vote, and then we would have seen far more rebels. But of course, Cameron is pressured and held back from expressing how he would like to express himself, sometimes by those dastardly Liberal Democrats who are such big fans of the European Union, blindly and foolishly, uneducatedly in my opinion, but those dastardly Liberal Democrats in the coalition agreement have one of the red lines is Europe, where we are, as a party, the Conservative Party, are on the side of the majority of the British people, and seeing that it would be far better for the British people to repatriate at least some powers. Now, I would go the whole hog and take them all back, but, you know, within the party...
What's your problem with Europe?
I'm on the hard fringe of get us out of Europe, please.
Why do you hate Europe?
Why? Because it holds us back in so much that we want to do. We're throwing good money after bad, sinking it into a black hole, chasing ever further union, ever further regulation, ever further power. We got enough debt in our own country. Let's pay off our own debt. Let's get our own country sorted out. Let's cut back on the massive, massive intrusive power of the state, some of which comes from Europe. So we look at things like the common fisheries policy affecting our fishing waters, the common agricultural policy hamstringing our farmers, the Human Rights Act, meaning that we're having to
have human rights. Don't like human rights. No.
Not in the form of this Human Rights Act, which is a SPIVs charter. Do you know, a charter for criminals to be coming and, come and getting compensation willy-nilly, let out early. It drives me absolutely potty. And I blame these dastardly Liberal Democrats for...
We did something good, eh, McCash? Lib Dems? Holding back...
Yeah,
cases like McGill.
I suppose the Lib Dems have done something good.
When?
It's possibly a shame that of all their red lines to choose, stopping people having a referendum on inclusion in the European Union was one of them, as opposed to the decimation of the welfare state, which apparently was not a red line for the Liberal Democrats. That's a shame.
Can we keep this to Europe?
Again, in the Liberal Democrat manifesto that they stood on in the last election, they made several pledges. One of their pledges was to have an in-out referendum. They said, we will campaign hard and aggressively make the positive case for the union, and we are positive that the people of Great Britain will keep us in the European Union.
I think
as soon as that referendum came to be a possibility, they withdrew their petition from their website that they had calling for a referendum, an in-out referendum, to settle the matter once and for all. Because let's face it, none of us in this room have ever been asked our opinion on our relationship with the European Union, and every single party in the last election and, you know, within the last 6-7 years have been talking, saying, yes, we'll give a referendum, we can have our say on our relationship with Europe. And as soon as the people came and said, we're going to sign this petition, we're going to get the backbench motion there, which is one of the good things we've done, is said that if you get 100,000 signatures on a petition, we'll have the debate in Parliament.
Did it get 100,000 signatures,
Ian? 100,000 signatures.
No, it didn't.
So we had the debate in Parliament. And on we go. So now we're raising another 100,000 signatures because we're taking the EU tactic of, if you get an answer wrong, ask the question again and keep asking it until you get the answer that you want. So we're going to keep raising signatures, keep raising petitions, keep raising this debate until we get the referendum. And then we can find out, Callum, who's right and who's wrong, because we'll put our view to the British people. The Liberal Democrats say the British people will overwhelmingly vote to stay in. I say the British people will overwhelmingly vote to fundamentally renegotiate, you know, see us having a free trade zone, which was the basic idea. Nothing more, nothing less, and happy days.
Fair enough, McCash, your view on the EU. I mean, personally, I quite like the idea that, you know, we get a lot of jobs from the EU, we get freedom to travel, we get a more diverse culture, but apparently those things aren't good things. McCash, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that if I wanted to tomorrow, I could go to any of 26 of the nation states and work there and live there completely legally. That's really good.
You still could, even if we were out the EU.
I can't go to Qatar.
Yes, you can.
Not
tomorrow. You need to wait and get a visa. You need to have a passport, and these things cost money. It's a financial barrier to cultural expansion.
Yeah. So. Is the way that it's just an institution for the perpetuation, the continuing of the capitalist state. What I'd like to see is not a
reference. I see it as a bastion of socialism, you know, centralised, the government taking over, the state taking over, and I see it as oppressive to capitalism.
Wow. Well, I suppose that says a lot about what we'd like to see without the euro, without the EU. But yeah, I feel this is a sort of a non-issue, to be honest. Like, the whole debate was a bit of a waste of time, because even if they'd won the vote in the House of Commons, the government still wouldn't have had to do a referendum. And then even if they'd done a referendum, it's not clear what would have happened with it. I would much rather have a referendum on the IMF, or on whether we wanted to bail out the banks. That would have been a good referendum. Do you want to give, like, trillions of pounds to banks who gambled your money? Yes or no? That would be a good referendum, but we did not do that.
Clap you down. No, Ed Miliband described this as a humiliation for the Prime Minister. Do you think it was, Ian?
Sorry, who's Ed Miliband?
He's the leader of the Labour Party.
Yeah. I think it's another awkward Ed moment. If you're online, have a wee Google for awkward Ed moment, and it's a fantastic website. Which
shout out for an internet meme there by Ian
sums
McGill.
Sums up the man. Ed has no credibility within his own party. Never mind within our party, your party. Ed Miliband is a busted flush imposed on the Labour Party by the unions to great amusement from everybody else. I do kind of wish we had some serious opposition down in Westminster there, but Ed Miliband is certainly not providing it. So Ed calls it a humiliation. Yeah, I'm not worried. That's not registering.
Yeah, I agree with Ian. I wish there was serious opposition to the Tory Lib Dem coalition down in Westminster, but alas, there is not. So there we go. I agree with the Tory. Fancy that.
Tell you, wow. Consensus breaks out, and it's all Ed Miliband's fault.
Blame Ed Miliband for consensus politics. There we go. So it got a little bit awkward it wasn't completely unawkward for Ed Miliband as well. I mean, is it not a bit hypocritical for him to say that, you know, this was terrible and it was an embarrassment, but then he whipped his MPs and some of them rebelled, so it was quite embarrassing for him as well, wasn't it?
I think it's more embarrassing for the MPs who did not rebel.
Well, they very, very few were battled, though, didn't they?
It was 19 Labour MPs voted for a EU referendum, which is not an insignificant.
It's not an insignificant amount, but I try to work out why would a Labour MP not rebel? You know, are they scared of Ed Miliband blocking their career progression? I think if I was in the Labour Party, it would maybe be better off to be seen as rebelling against Ed Miliband, because that's because he is not going to be the leader that takes him into the next general election. You heard that here first.
Oh, controversial claim there from Ian McGill.
Who will be?
Probably Yvette Cooper. But
I
know.
Fair enough. We'll move on from that then. After consensus broke out, a lovely warm feeling descended on the room. We'll move on to this, which I'm assuming there won't be much of a consensus. Edinburgh City Council and their plans to privatise bin collection are in doubt after the SNP decided that coalition doesn't mean they have to vote together anymore. Ian, you were again quite outspoken on most things, but this too, you were quite outspoken. What are your thoughts on the plans themselves, and then on the SNP?
Okay, on the plans themselves, I think the plans have great merit, as every party has identified. There has been great difficulties with the cleansing department over the last few years. The Lib Dem SNP, there's been a long industrial action work to rule out the current street cleansers, which has meant we already have private companies going around and doing our bin collection. So if we can get the private companies are able to do our bin collection as they are currently doing, and we can make a saving, we have to be doing that, because the choices are, do we throw money out at some old-fashioned Stalinist idea that the bins must be collected by the state, or do we actually spend some money building new schools or paying off some of our debt? Shock horror. So, you know, it's a massively overdue thing. I was very impressed at the mature decision that the Liberal Democrats and the SNP had made to take this forward. Massively depressed that the only people who actually voted for it in the end last week in the council was the Conservative group, because of Steve Cardowney's grandstanding. So Steve Cardowney absolutely wants to engineer a split with the Liberal Democrats so he goes into the next council elections in opposition. He's, you know, he's happy telling everyone this off the record and having a wee laugh. You know, everyone knows his strategy has been to engineer a split. He sees this as an issue where he can get that split so he can run at the council elections as opposition. I think it's just about the most selfish bit of politics I've ever seen, in that the council has this deficit budget. It has to address the issues that are there. Through the process, we're making good savings. We're getting our bins collected. And actually, does it matter if it's Joe Bloggs working for the council or Joe Bloggs working for a private company? It doesn't matter a jot to me. As long as we're getting our bins lifted, I am happy.
McCash, your thoughts?
Well, I'm ideologically opposed to privatisation in general. And also, I'd say that practically what tends to happen when something's privatised is the quality does not go up, it goes down, because there's no longer any accountability. So we've seen the same thing with housing associations that replace local government owned council houses. There's no accountability whatsoever between the tenants and the housing associations. And as a result, the quality and the service, if you want to put it like that, just completely goes down. And I think it's outrageous. The government has a duty to provide certain services for its people. That includes things like housing and schools and health, but also includes things like waste collection. I suppose you said earlier that you think we should spend our money on better things like building schools, but what the government's doing at the moment is privatising schools essentially as well through their free schools and such like, and also allowing for further private schools. So
crazy. Imagine bringing choice into education so a parent can make a choice. Yeah,
not really
the,
choice.
The council
though, is
still providing for the education because they are funding that education. The council is still providing for bin collection. They're funding for it, but they have a choice of an expensive, unproductive model or a less expensive, productive model, and they're going to take the less expensive, productive model if they're doing their job properly.
No, if they're doing their job properly, they'll be representing the people who elected them. And that means that they have a line of accountability between the electorate, or the population, and the services that are provided.
So why once you privatise,
that accountability is completely cut off. And that's outrageous. Like, that's the whole point of having, like, elections and democracy, so that you do have that line of accountability. If you start privatising everything up, then you lose that.
Well, Ian, answer that charge. That was the public don't want privatisation, and neither the Lib Dems or the SNP went into the election in 2007 with privatisation in their manifesto. Shouldn't they stick to what they promised?
Well, no, they went. They very much went in. The Lib Dems and the SNP, as the Conservatives did, went in saying we were going to address the terrible finances within the council, in the situation we have now, where we have a freeze on the council tax. You know, there's a finite budget that they have to spend. They said they were going to be very serious about addressing it, and they've also been, there's some other laudable stuff they've been doing, such as building up a reserve, which we'd never had in the council, because Labour had run that down. So they're spending choices. And at the time when the state option of bin collection was proving so inflexible and so incapable of providing the services, so much so that we've been throwing money down the line. We've got our state provision, but we've also got the private provision out in the streets lifting the rubbish for the last few years, because there's been a dragged out industrial action within the cleansing department, because they don't want to give up their outdated Spanish practices and actually give value for money there. Do you know, it's no surprise that we're taking it out.
By value for money, do you mean job losses and wage reductions?
No, wage reductions, but there's certainly some job losses.
Okay.
No one has an absolute right to have a job forever and ever and ever, even if they are not being productive and they're not doing it cost efficiently.
Well, I don't think
government's not a job creation scheme, and it's not.
No, that's exactly what the government is. It is a job creation scheme. The government should be ensuring that we are as close to full employment as possible.
So why shouldn't the government be providing jobs, Ian?
The government is providing jobs, but it's not a case of the government's going to provide a job for everybody.
Why not?
Because it's unaffordable, it's Stalinist, and that's
unaffordable.
Yeah.
Why is it unaffordable?
I'll tell you what's unaffordable.
Communism's been tried all over.
I'll tell you what's unaffordable. It's unaffordable to have people not working who can work and want to work. That is a complete waste of human potential. That's unaffordable. Giving everyone a job is the opposite of unaffordable.
So give them
that
a non-job as a minimum. Give them a non-job as a middle manager in the cleansing department.
Well, isn't that better than paying the benefits? If we're spending money on paying people benefits and they're not contributing
to the economy.
So you're
arguing that giving someone a non-job within a local authority is better than having them on benefits?
Yeah, but you're just...
Surely you think that. Surely you would rather... Maybe I'm making assumptions here about you, but surely you think that there's benefit scroungers and all these things and they'd be better off working.
Well, but you weren't talking about benefit scroungers earlier. You were talking about people who want to work and can work.
Yeah.
And that's not a benefit scrounger, okay?
Okay.
So that, you know, you have to be very,
Sorry, I didn't realise it's a technical definition of the term.
Well, there is, but, you know, there is. There's a difference between someone who wants to work and can work and is looking to work, and there's a difference between the benefit scroungers. Both of these sets of people exist. But what we need to do is lighten the tax burden, roll back the state, and free up our businesses to be creating jobs for people, real jobs for people with real value to them. And that's when there's going to be closer to full employment.
This has been a fun debate. I've enjoyed this. We're going to take a break. I think everyone needs to calm down, you know, take some deep breaths and come back, and we'll talk about something that I'm sure will be even less controversial. We're going to talk about the Occupy movement and whether or not it's... A, achieving its goals, and B, actually safe to take part in. And then we're going to talk about Glasgow University student president Stuart Ritchie and his somewhat questionable conduct potentially with the university. And maybe we'll talk a wee bit about Qatar and the Lib Dems and the SNP if we've got time. But this is Radiohead with Codex. That was Radiohead with Codex, because I couldn't get my own music to work. So I played some rubbish from the playlist. don't sack me. Yes. So we're going to talk about the Occupy movement. We've got a couple of news stories on this and a couple of comments as well from the Facebook and the Twitter. But I do actually have a comment already, if I could find it. Where did I put it? The comment from Derek, who said on Europe for you, Ian, that on Europe the Tories have shown themselves to be incapable of not fighting amongst themselves. The 81 Tories who backed a referendum were all doing it weren't all doing it because they think people deserve to vote. Many of them want to pull out, risking UK jobs, investment, and making us isolated because of their obsession with their precious sovereignty. That's a good point, though. Is that the MPs who voted for an EU referendum, did they vote for it because the British people said they wanted to make a choice, or did they do it because they want to pull out of the EU and see this as a way to do it?
Well, on the motion that went forward, it was to have a referendum. I don't think anyone in any party, I don't think even the UKIP say they would unilaterally pull out of Europe. I think even UKIP's view is, let's have the referendum, and our party,
I've done hustings with UKIP people who say, we'll pull out tomorrow, and it will save you this amount of money.
I think there's a legal process you have to go through, which is, give everybody a say. I know the Liberal Democrats were saying they were very sure that the people of the UK would return a big majority in staying in.
That's why we don't need to bother.
I know I personally think there would be a big majority in coming out. The truth, we'll only know when we get the referendum. We trust the people, and we do. Well, we try, us humble activists trust the people. It's,
well, indeed.
Nick Clegg, David Cameron, the...
moving on to the Occupy movement. And Mikesh, obviously you are a member of the left, the far... What would you call your... Would you like me to call you the far left or the organised left?
Communist left.
Ian, behave.
No, I swear...
I'll slap him down.
I don't really know. I don't think these kind of labels are always very helpful. So, well, yeah, hard left, that's fine. Okay. Organised left, whatever.
Well, this is an organised protest by the far left. The Occupy movement, which has taken place all over the world. It started in Wall Street.
I actually argue it's not really being organised by the hard left. And I think that's actually worse than the problems have arisen.
Okay. Well, you think one of the problems is that it's not organised by these nice lefties?
It's not about being nice or not being nice. I feel that the Occupy movement doesn't have a great deal of direction, and that's from primarily an absence of class politics to back it. So it's quite like that they're saying we don't like the bank bailouts, which is a very, very legitimate stance to have. Mm-hmm. But they don't seem to they seem to be mixed on what they're advocating in lieu of that. Like, and I feel that's just because of a lack of like ideology and like,
yeah. I mean, the case in point of that is the St. Paul's protest, isn't it? It was up to 3,000 protesters gathered outside the stock exchange, and then more than 100 tents were set up outside St. Paul's Cathedral, which it seems to be was chosen for this occupation purely because it was a big open space where they could camp. It doesn't seem to have. I mean, I'm not entirely sure what they want from St. Paul's in terms of achieving their aims, and I'm not sure what they hope to get out of occupying the grounds of a cathedral, you know.
Yeah, I don't think they want to get anything from St. Paul's. I mean, I think it's the same thing about St. Andrew Square, which is where Occupy...
And what are the, you know, occupations? I mean, we had the occupations in Edinburgh University, and that it was occupations most recently over our UK fees, and it was, we are occupying until you drop fees. And that, you know, there was a set of demands and a goal. Okay, it didn't happen, but at least there was an objective. What is the objective of Occupy Edinburgh or Occupy in St. Paul's?
I mean, I honestly don't know. I think there's lots of different people are going there with different objectives. Quite a popular front, I suppose. I suppose the simple objective is to get these issues out there, get people talking about them. And I think in that they have really achieved quite a lot. People are talking about the Occupy movement. People are talking about the bank bailout. So they've achieved that. But it's not clear what their position is on what we should do from here.
The news came out yesterday that the Dean of St. Paul's Cathedral had resigned over the protests. And there seemed to be, from what I could gather on the internet, a sense of bemusement from both sides of the divide, the people who supported the protest and the people who opposed it, as to why he'd had to resign. Ian, maybe get your thoughts in on Occupy St. Paul's and Edinburgh as well, in particular, but also the decision taken by Graham Knowles.
Yeah, I massively admire the Occupy movement. I think anyone out there exercising their political right to protest over a
Barmy cause,
but we're not quite sure what the cause is, but it might be to do with banks, but at the moment we're being vaguely effective at getting clergy to resign and giving Fox News, Sky News a few cheap hits as everybody sneaks off home at night to their warm houses and the Occupy movement queue up outside Starbucks to get their a shot of capitalist coffee. So it makes them, you know...
Because buying coffee completely negates your argument against capitalism, doesn't it, Ian?
Well, no, but my point was it gives Fox News and the right of centre newspapers and websites that I would particularly enjoy reading. it gives them some easy hits saying, actually, why are 9 out of 10 of these tents empty?
So the tents aren't empty.
Alex Dean, one of the Westminster councillor, he was on the news and I particularly enjoyed his interview. He said, it's great because we're going through the process to serve them all notice to quit, and actually the majority of them, they've already quit, so we're going to be serving notices to quit on empty tents. You know,
that's a facetious point though, because not that figure about the tents was disproved,
and then the disproving was disproved, and you know, and that is part of
what's happening.
This is part of why I find it quite amusing, is that, you know, talking about the bank bailouts long before the Occupy movement, they'll keep talking about the bank bailouts long after the Occupy movements. So, you know, there is a tradition of occupying. You know, you mentioned the Occupy recently at Edinburgh University against the student fees. We're going to stay here until we don't get our student fees. But you got student fees, and the Occupy's folks, they packed up and they went home, and that's, you know, and that's the way I see this Occupy movement going.
Okay, I think the issue is, it's not about whether you necessarily agree with what they're saying or whether you think they're hypocritical
I admire the right to protest.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the point is, the number of people who are doing it right now is just unprecedented. It's a huge event. Like this, we haven't seen things like this since like the fall of the Berlin Wall. It's massive.
I don't know. I would suggest that comparing it to the fall of the Berlin Wall is a massive, massive exaggeration. I would say it's nowhere near things like from stuff that I've seen, there was far more interest in things like the Stop the War going along, marching right across the countries in massive, massive numbers. Actually, the war still went ahead. You know, the Countryside Alliance, we had marches going on, in favour of things like fox hunting, but again, the fox hunting ban...
That was the issue of our time.
It still went ahead. The poll tax, the poll tax marches and riots are actually, they're actually connected and one through, but I would say, is the Occupy movement anything like as big as that? No, from where I see it, it's a few tents, a mix of some fairly interesting characters standing around in their dozens in Edinburgh and their low hundreds in London, and you're going, do you know what, is it? Going to last past the end of the month? Is it going to last past? Is it going to last to Christmas? No. Do you know what?
I suppose you have to look at it within the context, and I'm not saying that the Occupy movement on its own is as big as the fall of the Berlin Wall. When you look at it as what else is going on, like the collapse of the Eurozone, for instance, it's showing that there are some really, really big things happening right now, that just everything's happening all at once, compared to the war in Iraq was a big issue, but it was sort of a standalone. It wasn't happening at the same time as, like, every single country is experiencing, like, huge change. Like, the Arab Spring last year, like, to the Occupy movement now, and everything in between.
So the Occupy movement now, so forgive me, so for myself in Edinburgh, I hear tell of maybe 20 tents in St Andrew's Square where a dozen folks with dreadlocks standing about.
Well, they don't all have dreadlocks. No, my family Max does not have dreadlocks. I can vouch for that.
And what I'm saying is I hear tell because I've not even seen them, right?
Well, you should
them.
Go down and have a look.
Go down and have a look at what? I've seen a picture in the papers and do you know what?
I hear tell and talk to them and find out what their aims are.
I hear tell of, you know, a couple of people walking around with luminous vests on, badges saying steward and all, you know, all health and safety conscious. But do you know what? They're not.
Sounds about as well attended as a Scottish Tory conference, Ian.
Well, listen, I would wager that even small, irrelevant parties like the Green Party are have better attended conferences than the Occupy movement. What impact does the Occupy movement have on me as a local businessman in Edinburgh? I've not even seen them. I've not heard of them. I don't know what they're standing for. You know, as a political activist in Edinburgh, I don't know what they're standing for. I don't know what they're doing. Is it having any impact on people in Edinburgh? Well, a few folk who like a cup of coffee in St Andrew's Square are slightly, you know, find a new place to go and buy coffee. So the wee guy with the coffee stand in St Andrew's Square gets a different clientele for a few weeks.
Okay, well, I want to briefly cover a couple of comments. I asked for comments on Twitter and Facebook about the Occupy movement. Jill said, I think there's a lot of support for the main ethos of the movement, but the actions of the demonstrators can be alienating. Jago Brown on Twitter said the Occupy movement has good aims, but the protesters are hypocritical, thus undermining their own argument. Lots of larger comments. I did ask for brief comments. Thank you. We'll just take Derek's final statement, which was, ultimately, I think it's doomed. And Kate has left an interesting comment, which will move us on to the next brief part of the topic. We've got a couple of minutes on this, which is the safety of particularly women and vulnerable people at the Occupy demonstrations. There have been at least 9 reported rapes, one of a 14-year-old girl, another of a homeless woman who was 6 months pregnant. Fundamentally, my fundamental concern with Occupy is some of the women and vulnerable people are completely unsafe. As Kate says, the terrible reports of some of the things that are happening in this Occupy movement. I think, speaking to various people about it, one of the problems seems to be that you can just turn up and they will put you in a tent, and people are being put together with people, you know, vulnerable people are being put with people who they should not be put in sharing tents with, and that's leading to, you know, this sort of terrible thing happening. Mikesh, what are your thoughts on sort of the safety issues of the Occupy movement, and, you know, whether this is something that we do need to, you know, send police in to address, or, you know, that something can be done about this, or is it just another reason why the Occupy movement probably won't achieve anything?
I mean, for sending in the police, if anyone experiences sexual assault and they wish to report to the police, then of course they should do. I don't think anyone should force them to, or anyone should prevent them from. But like, I don't feel that sending in the police will necessarily be that effective, like, especially given the conviction rate of alleged rapists in Scotland, which is, I think, 8% or something outrageous like that. Like, I'm not sure what that's going to achieve. I think it comes back to my point about how the Occupy movement isn't founded on a set of coherent, like, politics. And for me, if you're doing any kind of action, like, you need to back that up with ideas. I think it's really important that these ideas include things like safe space, which is where, like, everyone feels they can be involved and everyone's safe in the action, I suppose. And that's clearly not been happening. Like, in Glasgow, which is where I believe at least one rape has occurred, they clearly did not have anything like that in place. And the way that the report that the Occupy Glasgow movement gave out after the incident was absolutely outrageous. They distanced themselves from the survivor. They said, instead of saying a member of our group was attacked, they said someone who came along and was camped near us, blah blah blah, and it's just sort of disavowing themselves, like saying that they're not part of this when actually they are. And obviously we're not saying that the Occupy Glasgow movement are like rapists, but they do have to accept some responsibility. There was someone who came along who's very, very vulnerable, someone who's 6 months pregnant, and they did not take steps necessary to ensure that that person was safe.
So you think you would like to see the Occupy movement take more responsibility for the things that are happening, and, you know, police themselves a bit better, and
yeah,
hopefully make things better that way.
I mean, I think the Occupy movement is trying to say, we don't like the system we have right now, we need to be moving to a new system. Well, I think you need to show us what that system's going to look like. At the moment, it looks like it's an incredibly unsafe place to be. Like, I don't want to live in a world that resembles the Occupy movement at the moment. It's, and if they're trying to be, like, sort of idealistic and saying, this is what we're going to aim for, well, I don't want to aim for that, because it looks terrible, because people get raped. Like, it's, I mean, it is as simple as that, really.
Ian, very quickly, your final thoughts on that.
Shotgun allegations. I mean, you know, I think you have to be careful commenting on things that are at the moment.
Talking more generally on the safety issues.
Anything like the Occupy movement at the moment is going to attract there's certain types of people it's going to attract, okay? Some of them will be some people who are vulnerable, will be attracted to any organisation, a grouping of people that says, come anyone, whoever you are, come and join our movement, and we'll give you a place to stay and a feeling of community. Because we have, in our, you know, in our broken society at the moment, people are crying
broken
out
Britain,
for...
Broken Britain.
People are crying out for, you know, companionship and interaction and the chance to feel valued and the chance to feel a part of something. And anything like that is going to attract some vulnerable people, and we have to be very realistic about that. And the Occupy movement should be aware of that. Wherever there's something that would attract vulnerable people, it will also attract the flip side, people who like to prey on vulnerable people. And, the Occupy movement, and, you know, they attract all sorts of others as well, all sorts of activists with all sorts of, you know, with all sorts of issues to push. But they do. They need to be aware and, you know, taking that into account and making sure it's safe for everybody, be it, you know, a very sorted person or someone who's vulnerable.
Okay, well, we're going to take another music break, and then we'll come back and briefly round up some other stuff. This is a song I've been waiting to play for a long time for you guys. Played our demo a lot last year. This is Kate McGill with the first single from her new album, Replaced. It is available now online and in Cafe Nero stores. You can get a lovely little book with the CD. It's very nice. So do check the album out. But this is the title track and the first single, Replaced. That was Kate McGill with Replaced, the title track from a new album, which is out now. We're going to move on to a couple of other stories. We've got about 10 minutes left to talk about the rest of the things that have been going on. But I want to talk about, you know, this is a student political radio station, so I wanted to talk about Stuart Ritchie, Glasgow SRC president, who I met the other week at an NUS event in Liverpool. Sorry, he wasn't at NUS. I don't want to slander his name as a Glasgow representative by saying he was at NUS. He was at Aldwych. Good guy, but it seems he's been getting himself into a little bit of hot water, particularly over rest of UK fees and his relationship with university management. Several emails released through an FOI show that he'd been trying to exclude his deputy president of communications from meetings with university management, and had been arguing for the fee solution, the £27,000 that Glasgow eventually went with, and then criticised it in a public press release. McCash, your thoughts?
I mean, I suggest that the Glasgow students know confidence in, but apparently there are no formal mechanisms for doing that, so he's just
what?
Here forever, apparently. Yeah, no, it's absolutely outrageous that... I suppose... one thing is that it's really, really two-faced to be saying one thing behind closed doors and saying another thing in public. That is an issue in itself. But secondly, what is he even doing? Like, arguing for £27,000... Sorry, for £9,000 fees, that's £6,000. Like, that is just not representing his constituents one bit. Like, I suppose... He was elected on a manifesto of whatever it was. Presumably not £36,000 fees. And if he had said that he was in favour of £36,000 fees, no one would have voted for him. Because that's not what any student wants, and it's not good for the higher education sector either. Yeah.
So Mr. Ritchie campaigned, he didn't campaign, sorry, he advocated in meetings the £9,000 capped at £27,000, which is what Aberdeen had already gone for and other universities, and then he criticised it. He criticised the university making a decision that was slightly lower than that, £26,000, in a public press release. Now, I think there are two issues. The first is the issue of the fees, and the second is the issue of the relationship with management. But I'm not entirely sure what he's done. I don't think he's done anything wrong, really. by advocating one position and taking another in a public press release, because frankly we did it in Edinburgh, and as a member of the Edinburgh University exec who made that decision, we made a call that we would support, that we would ask the university to set fee, to set the overall fee level at no. Press release as it was, they did 36, and we criticised them for increasing fees at all. But I think, particularly when Glasgow had gone for £26,000, maybe he could have been a little bit more restrained in his language and noticed the restraint that Glasgow had put in their fees, because Glasgow have some of the lowest fees in for a Scottish university, which is remarkable considering they're one of the best universities in Scotland by some measures. Ian, what are your thoughts on that issue, in particular the fees issue?
It's interesting for me. The guy is clearly ambitious for his university and wants them to get the maximum funding to provide the best courses, to provide the best services for the students.
Ian likes
students.
Tuition fees. Okay, just a point
that doesn't surprise me.
No, it's not about liking tuition fees, it's just being realistic about realistic about the financial situation and saying, okay, I want my universities to be well funded, I want them to be offering excellent courses, and I want them to be offering a wide range of courses, and that needs to be paid for somehow. So he obviously recognises that, but I have to say, I'm unsurprised that there's a union leader there who thinks he's untouchable and entirely unaccountable to his members who elected him.
Who cannot be
no confidence or removed. Am I shocked that there is a union figure saying one thing and doing another? Am I shocked that there's a union figure out of touch with his members? Am I shocked that he can't be removed? No, really, it sums up why unions to me are not the be all and end all in this great white hope that some people would paint them as.
Indeed. And briefly on the other issue, on his relationship with university management, other emails showed that he was speaking to university management and tried to exclude more often without Ian might be a good idea, and did make some disparaging comments about his deputy president. First thing, if you're going to do that, don't do it in emails, because they can be FOI'd. Mm. It really shows a as you say, I think it does show that he thinks he was untouchable. That, you know, if he wanted to do that and get away with it, he could have said it face to face in a private meeting, yeah, and probably gotten away with it. But the fact that he's put it down on paper shows that he thinks that he is untouchable. Mukesh, what do you think about his relationships with senior management and other sabbaticals?
Well, he clearly doesn't have great sense of camaraderie with his fellow sabbaticals, does he? The issue with his relationship with senior management, I think, is an interesting one, because it does come up quite frequently. A student union, or a union in general, is not supposed to be mates with the people who they are essentially fighting against. Like, the student union is supposed to be fighting for things from the university, not to be mates with the university. And if they're on good terms, that must be because they have won significant gains from the university and they're still on good terms. If they're not winning anything from the university, then they shouldn't be on good terms, because they're not doing their job properly.
Okay, well, very, very briefly, we've got a couple of minutes left. We'll talk about this Lib Dem cartoon that came out after the First Minister made comments about the remarkable similarities between Scotland and Qatar. The Lib Dems parodied this by pointing out the absolute monarchy, suppression of gay rights and death penalty in Qatar, picturing Alex Salmond as some sort of Qatari dignitary, and a picture of the lovely sand dunes of Edinburgh there with a camel. This has attracted some controversy. It's now been retracted by the Liberal Democrats, now leader Willie Rennie. It's places like the Better Nation blog, which is a green blog. Mukesh, there you go. Nice green bloggers getting in the action. Took it very, very seriously. Mukesh, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I don't think it's a very big issue. It's a stupid advert that the Liberal Democrats have done. It's quite insensitive, I suppose. It's got a silly picture of Alex Salmond wearing a turban? I can't even really see it very well. It's stupid. It's just really, really stupid. I don't know why they did it, but I also don't think it's the most offensive thing in the world. It's just ridiculous.
Ian,
If you're going to make statements, and if you're the First Minister, who is not everybody's cup of tea, despite what he thinks of himself. And you make statements like Scotland and Qatar share similar, share remarkable similarities. You open yourself up to parody. I would suggest you open yourself up to being lampooned. I would suggest the lampooning is better coming from activists, the general public, etc., rather than our political leaders like Willie Rennie, who should probably be above that and take into Sam into account for his poor running of the country. There are many, many issues that he can be held to account for. And I guess I would see that a political leader should be holding him to account for that and leaving the parodying and the poking fun at to folks who are better at poking fun, basically. Do you know, there are folks, but, you know, I can see the fun in having a go at Scotland's similarities to Qatar, but I can see that there's people, but yeah, there are funnier people and people better skilled at doing that than Willie Rennie and the Lib Dems.
And on that bombshell that the Lib Dems have no sense of humour, we will have to end the show. It is 10 o'clock. Thank you very much to my panel, James McCash and Ian McGill. Thank you to Marcus Kernahan, who was supposed to be here but was up till 4 a.m. finishing the paper for the journal. So do look out for the journal when it comes out tomorrow, because it's a wonderful paper and better than The Student. This is Adele with Someone Like You.